Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Back in on the drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the new Odyssey.com app. If you have the radio.com app, it is going to update to the new Odyssey app. We appreciate you listening to us wherever you are listening. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Cody Tapp to talk a little bit of Royals baseball. Before we do that, let's update you on the top story in Kansas City. Not a huge move, but certainly a move for the Kansas City Chiefs. They signed Austin Blythe. He was the starting center for the Los Angeles Rams. He now comes over to join the Kansas City Chiefs on a one-year deal. It is expected that he's going to start for this team on the offensive line, and Nick Allegretti is going to move as a reserve type player. We'll certainly see what happens. Maybe they even draft over Austin Blythe, but as of right now, it would appear that Austin Blythe is going to be the new starting center for your Kansas City Chiefs. So yesterday, as I'm watching the Elite Eight game between Baylor and Arkansas, and I'm seeing a really high-level college basketball game, I was fixated on Davion Mitchell from Baylor. He was doing just about everything. Nobody on Arkansas could really guard him. They couldn't really stay in front of him. He was playing, I would say, very different than the way modern basketball is. He was, I'm getting to the basket, and I'm getting a good shot, and there's nothing you guys are going to be able to do to stop it. Wasn't really shooting threes from the outside. Baylor's not a really great three-point shooting team. He was also setting guys up and just creating opportunities for everybody else. He was by far and away, I thought, the best player on the floor and the most impactful player on the floor. And it got me thinking to what Bill Self said after their loss to USC last week.
For us to be a team that really has a chance to be a national contender, I mean, we need to get a little bit more athletic. We do, and we need to get a little longer and bigger and those sorts of things. I thought our guys, you know, for the most part, played pretty well and played maximize their individual abilities pretty well this year. But tonight, the length definitely mattered.
When you think about college basketball and the teams that we think are going to make the Final Four, Houston, high scoring, up and down, can also defend, but a long, just lengthy athletic type team. Baylor, been the second best team in college basketball for virtually the entire year. They got just multiple athletes on their team. Gonzaga, no shortage of athletes on their team. Michigan, I think they're going to win today. The exact same. I think it's kind of normal for us to do this if your team's not in this stage, whether it's the NBA playoffs, the NFL playoffs, the college basketball. You kind of look at where your team is. You look at these teams thinking, and how does your team match up? Kansas used to have those kind of athletes. They used to have a guy like Mitchell that could sort of take over the game and just do whatever he wants to. Frank Mason was that kind of player. I'm going to get to the basket. I'm going to be able to hit the three. I'm going to be able to beat you off the dribble. I'm just more athletic than everybody else. If Kansas is going to get back to that elite level, they got to get back to having those kind of athletes. And we talked about it when they lost to USC. The biggest thing that was surprised to me is just seeing how in a short period of time, KU just doesn't have those kind of dogs on that roster. And now you're thinking in the transfer portal, as you got ability to sort of reset your roster in a short period of time, those are the kind of players that KU needs to be going after here.
Yeah, I mean, that would certainly help. I've seen KU basketball teams win a lot of games, go to Final Fours, hell, win national championships when they've got guys like Cole Aldridge, who nobody's going to confuse with an Olympic athlete, or Jeff Withey, I mean, Travis Relaford. Now, you're right. They've also had guys like Ben McLemore, who are just wild athletes, or Joel Embiid, you point out, Frank Mason. I think that it's a combination of this year's KU team didn't have that guy or the experience. Like, they had some experience, and they had some guys that could put the ball in the bucket, but they didn't have both. Like, I've gotten used to watching KU basketball my entire life, or they didn't have the most experience or the most talent. Like, this was just a good college basketball team by KU standards. It was probably Bill Self's least talented basketball team. When he points out that his guys played up to their full capability, I believe that. I believe what he's saying. I think that they did. I just think that on a talent level, they weren't there with a Gonzaga. They weren't there with a Baylor or a Michigan. That's why they didn't win as many games. That's why they got knocked out early, because they weren't quite as talented. I do think that next year, even if they bring back essentially the same roster with the same dudes, that they're not going to be wildly athletic.
I don't think they're doing that with the transfer portal. I expect KU to be a drastically different team the next time.
As much as they're going to lose guys, they're going to bring a couple of guys in. And we've seen in the past that transfers, even at a place like Kansas, can help. I mean, remember Kentucky brought in that dude a couple of years ago from Stanford that averaged 20 points a game? KU brought in a guy like Tariq Black a few years ago that ended up being a second team all Big 12 player. So most of the time at a place like KU, you've either got the one and done or you develop a guy for a couple of years. With COVID and everything, you're right. It's going to be a very weird offseason. I mean, in theory, guys like Marcus Garrett could come back and play a super senior year if they want. So the truth is, I don't think anybody knows what the roster is going to look like next year, not just for KU, but for anybody.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll be joined by Cody Tapp. Cody Tapp will join us to talk a little bit of Royals baseball. So I saw this stat yesterday after the game, because I asked the question, when was the last time, or has it happened before, that a team made it to the Final Four and didn't play a single-digit seed? Houston is in the Final Four. They didn't play a single-digit team. They beat a 15 seed, a 10 seed, an 11 seed, and a 12 seed to make it to the Final Four. It's their sixth Final Four and their first since 1984. There have been 10 teams to go to the Final Four and beat three double-digit seeds. They're the first team to do it where they beat all four. Maybe I should have a stronger opinion and a stronger answer than this than I have. I don't know if any of us have any clue how good Houston is as a basketball team. They're in the Final Four, not taking anything away from their accomplishment. It's hard to win four games in the NCAA tournament. But we're talking about a two seed who beat the 15, 10, 11, and two. They played the lowest possible seed they could play in every single round of the NCAA tournament. This next game, they're going up against Baylor. Them Baylor athletes are a lot different than the Morgan State athletes. Those athletes are way different than the Oral Roberts and the Abilene Christian and the teams that we've seen them play. I'm not taking anything away from their accomplishment, but this might be the most unproven Final Four team that we've ever seen.
What's the line for that game? Because the more you talk, the more it sounds like Baylor's going to absolutely destroy them. They're not tested. Like, I know that there have been some teams that we've seen. VCU, when they got to the Final Four, like they took a hell of a difficult path to do it. I've never heard a route like this. That's good living, though. You know, like, if you can do it, playing a 15, a 10, an 11, and a 12, you're right, though. Like, they've gotten all the way to this point.
The thing is, though, and sorry to cut you off, Houston might be the best team in the country. I don't know how any of us can know over the last 2 weeks of watching them play, because they just haven't played, like,
Creighton. Well, you know they're not the best team in the country. Like, I mean, you've watched Gonzaga play, so you know they're not the best team in the country.
What I'm saying is, like, I've watched Gonzaga play 13 times this year. I watched Houston play like 6 times this year. So I've been exposed to way more Gonzaga. Houston might be just as good as Baylor, but I've seen Baylor tested. They play in the Big 12. I just saw Baylor tested against Arkansas. Like, Arkansas is a really good team. Got the Elite Eight. Was the second best team in the SEC this year. Houston might be a legit top 10 team. They got a great coach. Quentin Grimes, their best player. We're certainly familiar with him. I just don't know how we know in the tournament, because they ain't play nobody.
Well, you should know, because the people that are way smarter than you, that watch even more college basketball than you do, put them as a 2 seed this year. So it's not like this team came out of nowhere. I mean, hell, when KU played Syracuse back in the day, KU was, what, a 2 or 3 seed? Syracuse was a 4 or 5 seed. So we're talking about a 2 seed here. It's not like they came out of nowhere. Heading into this tournament, there are only 4 teams that had better odds to win the national championship than Houston. So, again, I'm with you. I don't know a whole lot about them. I know Kelvin Sampson's a great coach. I know they got experience. I know they got a little bit of size. They got good guard play. But I agree with you. I don't know a whole lot more about them. They're not really tested.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll be joined by Cody Tapp. He'll join us. It does feel like we are on a crash course collision between Gonzaga and Baylor, right? Like, yeah. This season we've seen they are the two best teams in the tournament. We've also continued to see that those are the two best teams. Like, it would be a monumental upset at this point if that's not the last game of the season, if it's not Gonzaga versus Baylor. Like, the basketball gods owe us this after this season. The COVID gods took it away earlier this year. We're supposed to see this matchup. We deserve to see Baylor and Gonzaga play each other on a neutral site, right?
Yeah, and at this point, the way that Baylor's playing, I think they're the only team in the country that can hang with Gonzaga. Like, you and I differ. And I've been wildly impressed with USC. It's not just because they smoke my Jayhawks like a blunt. They're big. They got NBA talent. They're well coached. They're one of the hottest teams in the entire country over the last month. They won their conference. That is a really good basketball team. They go 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", on their front line. USC's the real deal. I bet they get destroyed tonight. Like, the line is 8.5, 9, depending on where you bet. It should be 14 or 15. I've seen a lot of these teams. I mean, Creighton was a better basketball team during the regular season, for most of the year at least, than USC was, and we saw what happened. Like, they kind of hung in with them for a while and then ended up losing the game by 18 or 20. That's probably what happens tonight. I think Baylor's the only team that can even hang with the Zags.
Let's fast forward just a little bit because I think this is going to be the national championship. What's the line between Baylor and Gonzaga?
Still bigger than you're thinking in your head right now, like 6.5 or 7. I think it is.
Yeah, I think it's like, I mean, I would take Baylor if you're going to give me that many points.
I think a lot of people will. I think that's what Las Vegas wants. I'd still take Gonzaga. I mean, you just said it yourself. So they've won 27 straight games right now by double figures. Earlier this year, they beat KU relatively handily.
I think Baylor's the only team that can match them athletically.
They beat
though.
Virginia relatively handily. They beat West Virginia relatively handily. They beat Iowa. Like, those were all teams that spent time in the top 10. So if your argument at this point for Gonzaga is they haven't beat a really good team in a long time, you're not going to be able to say that once they face Baylor. Tonight they're facing USC. Then unlikely they're going to have to face Michigan to get the national championship. What are you going to say about them then? Not you, but what's anybody going to say about them then?
Rob, if you had to guess the line right now, I think it should be Gonzaga -5 for the national title game. If you had to, like, foresee right now, what's the line on the national championship game if it's Baylor versus Gonzaga? Because I think if Gonzaga plays anybody that's not Baylor, they'll probably be a 9.5-point yeah. favorite in the national title game.
I was actually thinking 4, 4.5 was kind of my ballpark for Gonzaga and Baylor, kind of where I'd put it. It also depends on who they face in the final four. Like, if they end up facing UCLA and they get to thump UCLA by 19 or 20 points, I think the spread just widens because people would have been like, they just did this to UCLA. Or if they play Michigan, I think the spread will be closer because they'll play a closer game in the Final Four.
The over-under is going to be fun to watch in that game, too, because it's going to be a big boy number. Gonzaga's averaging, what, 85, 86 points per game this season? And then you got a team in Baylor who, when they want to, like last night, and they get run and gun and knocking down their threes, they could put up 100 spot on you, too. I mean, that's what we're talking about, like, 100. I think that the line's probably around 6.5, 7. I bet the over-under's around like 160, 162. That would be a terrific and wildly entertaining national championship game.
By the way, this is apropos to what's happening we're talking about. Kansas has gotten a recruit to commit. Bobby Petford Jr. just announced he will attend the University of Kansas. KU now up to the number 5 recruiting class in all of college basketball.
Can we make a rule?
Even with all that FBI stuff going on? Wait, good players are still coming to Kansas?
This fit the topic. It's within the realm of what we're doing.
What are you going to yell at, Rob?
No, I just got a question. We're doing breaking sounders when you're not getting 5-star kids. That's where we at now. You getting low four star kids, and we're not having the breaking news sounder.
Don't tell
for those
the man
kids?
How to do his job. He ain't telling you how to do your job. Good job, Rob. You deserve a raise.
I mean, if this is during a Royals topic, no. But we're talking college hoops.
Okay, my
it
bad.
Fits.
I mean, I looked at Rivals during the break. He was the 112th kid in the country. Yo, KU in there getting them big dog recruits, dog. Get them. Get them big dog recruits to Lawrence, Kansas. Adidas working hard out here, bro. Y'all getting the 112th kid in y'all class? Y'all getting Xavier Pinson to commit? Yo, congrats, man. I appreciate that. Coming up in a little bit, we'll be joined by Cody Tapp. We'll also give you a chance to win $1,000 in the National Cash Contest. That $1,000 might go to a recruit. It's the Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Back in on the drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. The text line, CDOT is a big hater. I'm not a hater. I just didn't know that getting kids outside the top 100 now qualified for breaking news. Like, we do the breaking news tomorrow. Tomorrow, if Jacksonville traded the number one overall pick, we'd play the breaking news sounder. That seems like a worthy breaking news type event. Tomorrow, Bobby Witt Jr. twisted his ankle and be out for 30 days. We'd play the sounder. I didn't know we were just doing it. The KU got a kid that's 115th in his class. I didn't know. I apologize. So I'm wrong. I don't want to demean anybody's accomplishments. Congratulations, Kansas. You're out here blazing the recruiting trail. Let's go to the phone lines right now and be joined by our next guest. His name is Cody Tapp. He's on the Midday Show. He's also just an overall swole guy. Cody, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. I feel like you pick on Alex much more than me, so we just clearly have a better rapport.
I like making fun of Alex for whatever reason. I think the reason is he cheers for Kansas. Other than that, he's a swell guy. He just has that one character flaw.
I like Kansas celebrating getting the top 100 kid. They had two kid transfer out. Crickets.
Right now we're talking to Cody Tapp, talking a little bit of Royals baseball. Cody, what would you say is the most interesting thing about the Royals heading into the season?
I think a lot of it is just based in, you know, like this is supposed to be the turning point of optimism. So, like, they've been a bottom five offense the last 2 years in a row in full seasons. Last year they didn't rank much better in the shortened season. So, I mean, like, for me, it's like they're actually trying. They traded for Benintendi. They signed Santana. It sure looks like Kyle Isbell's going to be on the opening day roster, so they're actually going to try to win. Like, that's the most interesting thing about them. I don't know how good they're going to do at it just yet. Vegas certainly doesn't think it's going to be a massive difference, but they're actually trying to win. That, to me, is the most fascinating part about it. They should be, I don't know, moderately better on offense just based on the additions they had.
That was sort of the vibe that I got from it, too, that I think in years past they might have carried the bat of Nicky Lopez, but they're not really doing it this year. What do you think about Kyle Isbell? He's going to start with this team. I imagine he's going to be here at least for the first 30 days or so, and we'll sort of evaluate if he gets off to a quick start or not. What do you think of him breaking the lineup?
So, you know, we talked a lot about Bobby Witt Jr. having never played like high minor league baseball. Kyle Isbell has never played above high A, so like Wilmington. But I mean, everyone loves him. Everyone in the organization, and I've probably talked to five or six, including a couple of scouts at this point, love him and think he would have either played high minor league ball, obviously last year, or he would have been there sooner had he not been injured a couple of years ago. So if it wasn't for that, I think Kyle Isbell, we would have probably already assumed he was going to be on the major league roster. And then the timeline got pushed up a little bit because they thought Nicky would keep his job and he couldn't hit. And then Kyle Isbell crushed the ball in spring. So I think he projects to be an everyday major league player. I don't know if he has that like superstar stuff yet, like we talk about with Bobby Witt Jr., but you know, now people, Hunter Dozier's already calling him like mini Alex Gordon, so putting a lot on the kid. But he's a really talented player, and he hit at every level unless he was hurt.
Cody, aside from injury, what's the quickest path for Bobby Witt Jr. to get up here? Is it the team being good, the team being bad, or him just being so good himself that they can't keep him down?
Team good. It's now slowed, right? We talk about Kyle Isbell being up. That means if there's any injury, Dozier, Witt, Mondesi, Isbell, Witt goes to whatever position that person's playing, and then immediately Nicky Lopez goes to the infield. Like, we know that. We know that's exactly how they're going to handle the first injury, even though, like, Carrington, you said they're not going to carry him. The second that happens, they're going to move that around. Them being good, Sean, is my guess for the easiest way to get Bobby Witt up. If they're really good and one spot in the order is like, yikes, like we can't, it's been 4 months or 3 months and they haven't hit a lick, then you can make the argument. Call up Bobby Witt Jr. Again, put Whit Merrifield in whatever spot is just simply not performing and then move it that way. But now that they've shook all this thing out, I think it's going to be a few months.
Which arm on this team excites you the most? Is it one of the guys in the bullpen coming back? Brady Singer in year two, Brad Keller because they finally got an ace. Tell your kid to be quiet in the background. She's distracting me. Or is it maybe one of the – I'm just messing with you, Cody. Or is it maybe one of those guys that's still coming up the minor league level like a Daniel Lynch or an Ace Lacy? Which guy do you have your eyes on?
Lynch. You know, the major league, it's like – I think Keller's already a number one or number two starter. Yeah. I'm really confident in him. I don't need to see more. I'm already a big Brad Keller believer. But then it's like Duffy and Minor are kind of the same guys over the course of their career. Sometimes hurt, sometimes really good starters, sometimes average starters. Okay, great. I'm good there. And then Bubich is like, I'm just more excited personally for what I think Daniel Lynch can be than what like maybe Chris Bubich can be. In the bullpen, I'm just looking for any kind of consistency. Stalmont's already fun to watch. If I can just get a moderate amount of consistency, I'm going to feel really good about Stalmont or Barlow. But there's no arms out there that I'm like, can't wait. Can't wait to see them. Most of the arms I'm excited about are still coming up through the minors.
Right now we're talking to Cody Tapp as we take a look at the Royals as we are days away from opening day at this point. Cody, where's your satisfaction with the lineup? I don't like Adalberto Mondesi hitting third in the lineup, but for the most part, I don't have too many other issues. I'd probably swap it and maybe have Soler hit third and then kind of flip-flop those two guys, but that'd be my only complaint.
So I don't mind Mondesi when he's hitting well, and they've protected Mondesi and Salvi from themselves, right? Those two guys don't. Like, if an average at bat for a major leaguer is seven pitches, they see four. But they put him between Carlos Santana, who sees about as many pitches as anyone in baseball. So they're trying to, like, break those guys up, I think, a little bit to try to insulate them for the lack of pitches they see by guarding them with Santana. So if Mondesi's hitting well, I'm fine with him hitting third because I still think that that's their hope for where he'll be. But boy, if he hits slow, Carrington, they got to move him down the order. They got to be willing to move him around like they used to do Gordon. Remember Gordon being hitting well a few years ago, and they'd let him hit second for a while, then he'd stop hitting, and they'd hit him seventh? That's how they have to play Mondesi. Just as long as they don't think it's going to play head games with him, and if you let him know ahead of time, we're going to move you up and down depending on performance, I got no problems. I mean, a really good lineup has Hunter Dozier hitting seventh in the order. He was damn near an all-star 2 years ago in a full healthy season. So I'm good with the orders it sets. It actually projects to be pretty good.
This might be a weird question, so correct me if you hear it different than maybe how I'm asking it. What player do you think is that sort of swing player for the lineup? Because I'm really optimistic about the lineup. I think it's the best lineup they've had since the window closed. I kind of look at it as being Hunter Dozier. Like, if Dozier is what he was in 2019, I think everything else falls into place.
I think it's Benintendi. Dozier makes sense because In his one full healthy season, he's like a well above average major league bat hitting seventh. You're like, whoa, he was hitting third for the team a couple of years ago. So, yeah, he's a swing guy because if he's hitting well and Mondesi's hitting poorly, Carrington, you can almost just damn near flip him and move no one else in the order at all, which is great. But Benintendi, for me, is the only way the top of the order stays together because I think Mondesi's going to go up and down the lineup because he's inconsistent. I think Soler, Santana, Salvador Perez kind of are who they are. And Benintendi's like that one guy that I think in Boston they lost faith on. But really, I don't understand because it was like one 14-game season last year with an injury and one bad 26 days, roughly, in 2019 they seem to be judging that off of.
Right now we're talking to Cody Tapp for a couple of more minutes. Cody, let's assume that they are up 3-1. On Thursday and on opening day, how confident are you that they're going to win heading into the seventh inning with their bullpen?
70%. I mean, Holland was pretty good in the late innings last year, and I like Stalmont and Barlow a lot. I assume they'd go that route. I'm still not sure, I guess, where Wade Davis fits into the mix. So depending on how they line those guys up, I feel pretty confident. The bullpen was pretty improved last year. I mean, it was only 60 games, but they were certainly better than they were 2 years ago when, or 3 years ago is really bad, but 2 years ago when it wasn't very good. They're better. I'd say 70, 75%. It's not 2014 or 15 or anything, but the bullpen to me is definitely better, Carrington.
Cody, I haven't heard your official win prediction for the Royals. I'm at 77. Sean's at 75. Rob's also in that 75 to 77 range. What's your win prediction for the team?
78. I'm probably more optimistic than most, but that's, again, from the guys I mentioned. You know, Andrew Benintendi, I don't understand why people don't think he's a consistent bat. Hunter Dozier, when healthy, is a consistent bat. He's proven that. He was only bad last year in COVID. So, like, there's a – I think there's less leeway in the offense they have now than in the last few years. The thing I fear the most, the thing that'll blow up in my face if I'm way off on this thing, is starting pitching. Like, the bullpen's good enough. I think the offense is good enough, even though I haven't ranked well. The starting pitching is where, like, I legitimately have grown less and less confident, getting closer to the beginning of the season.
Last question here, Cody, and we appreciate your time. For people who haven't been following the Royals super closely and are going to start following them on Thursday, what would you say are the keys for this team to really get off to a good start? We all agree, especially with this team, with their youth and kind of trying to take that next step, this team can't create and dig themselves in a hole early. What are you going to be looking for the first, I would say, 10 to 14 days of the season when they play so many day games and the schedule is so disjointed?
Bullpen going, you know, being consistent early is really almost more important than starting pitching, because the starting pitching, it seems like they're a little quicker on the trigger because there's a million off days early, right? Like, so they play on Thursday for opening day, off Friday, the following Friday, they're off. So I think the bullpen being more consistent early will matter for them, and they can't go ice cold. They had the most home runs out of anybody in spring training, second most hits, second highest slugging percentage, third best OPS. And now it's going to be cold. Everywhere they go, it's probably going to be cold and not hitting in Arizona anymore. So they can't go like last year. I think they scored like 7 runs in their first 3 games. It just can't be like that. Even if it's a few more, like, it doesn't have to be offense explosion, but they can't start that way and then expect to start the season hot.
That is our guy, Cody Tapp. He is on the midday shows, joining us today on The Drive. He'll join us every week as we kind of look at Royals baseball. Cody, man, always good catching up with you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, fellas.
Absolutely. That is our guy, Cody Tapp, joining us on the show today. Your National Cash Contest code word is Penny, P-E-N-N-Y, Penny, P-E-N-N-Y. Text the word Penny to 72881. Penny, P-E-N-N-Y is your National Cash Contest code word. I think you and I are on the same page about the Royals and the importance of getting off to a hot start. The Royals just historically have not gotten off to really good starts. So every season since 16, 17, 18, 19, obviously last year doesn't count, they have had at least 5-game losing streak before Memorial Day. They went on a stretch leading up until 2015 where 14 consecutive years they had a 6-game losing streak before Memorial Day. For the most part, this team has done something in the first 30 to 45 days of the season that basically bury any level of hope, any level of optimism that you have about the team. It's going to be imperative for this team to avoid some of those pitfalls. And last year, you and I were talking so much about this team's ability to tread water and how long they could tread water. They didn't tread water from the very beginning of the season and drowned themselves and then spent the second half of last year sort of trying to dig themselves out of it. I don't think this team can do that this upcoming year.
It's also getting a little bit old that they play their best baseball at the very end of the year when it doesn't matter. Like, I know that at that point you can go out to the stadium and get your cheaper tickets and, you know, who cares? Like, I'd like for them to do that at the beginning of the year. Even if CDOT, it doesn't lead to this team in the postseason or the World Series or anything like that, it's much more exciting. As you point out, the last 5 years as a baseball fan in this town, you haven't even gotten a chance to get excited because they buried themselves so early on. When I was a kid one time, this must have been like 94, 95, long-ass time ago, I remember the Royals got off to a 2-16 start. So 2-16, you're 18 games into a 162-game summer. How fun is that when you're already either mathematically or, you know, by the eye test, you've buried yourself? The good thing is this. The Royals shouldn't get off to that start this year. If you look at your schedule, they play the Texas Rangers at the beginning of the year. Texas is not good. In fact, Texas is terrible. Their over-under this year in Las Vegas is 66 wins, so they ain't a good baseball team. The Royals also play Detroit in April. They're even worse than Texas. They're over-under 64.5. And then there's one team that's worse than both. They're called the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're supposed to lose 103 games this year, and the Royals play them. So, see that you talk about the schedule early on. nine games in April are against the projected three worst teams in baseball. So if they get off to a bad start, something really bad happened.
And, I mean, just going even a little bit further is, I know last year doesn't really count because they had a five-game losing streak before Memorial Day, and the season obviously started way after Memorial Day. I mean, this team had a seven-game losing streak in the first 13 games of the season last year. They were 3-10 through the first 13 games of the season. After that point, they were always sort of trying to fight what they kind of did, dug themselves in a hole. That's why I think, at least from this offense, and you talk a lot about sort of the uncertainty about the lineup, the pitching is going to be up and down because I think they got a lot of young guys that are going to kind of go through the ebbs and flows of pitching for a 162-game season. Man, this offense has to at least be able to carry you from the beginning. And last year, that's not what happened. Cody alluded to it, but, I mean, their first series of the season, they scored five runs in three games. That's just not good enough. I don't care who you're playing. You got to be able to consistently score runs, and I think this lineup is built in a way, at least on paper, you shouldn't have those kinds of dry spells. I'm not saying you're going to be one of the best offensive teams in the league, but your lineup should be able to carry you just a little bit, and by the time the offense had sort of come around and were able to carry him, to your point, it was just too late.
At the beginning of the year, I think there's a lot more questions, to your point, about the pitching than there is about the lineup. You're a little more optimistic about the lineup than I am, which I certainly appreciate. We know that Whit Merrifield's going to do his thing, but there's a lot of – we know Salvi's going to do his thing, but there's a lot of range between what Modesty can be, what Soler can be, what Dozier can be, what a lot of these guys can be, what Isbell can be coming up to the big leagues for the first time. You're talking about half the lineup has major question marks, but that also means that half the lineup, you at least know what you got. When it comes to the rotation, C-Dot, I think there's a ton of upside. I mean, a ton of upside. Like, I think by the end of this year, the Royals could have a top half of baseball rotation. And then 2 years from now, the Royals could have a top five, top 10 rotation. Then we're really talking. When's the last time in your life that you can remember the Royals had a top five or top 10 starting rotation?
Never.
It's never happened. And I don't care if it's you or your pops or your grandpops that's listening right now. The Royals have never had that type of rotation. They've at least got that chance. And if it ever comes to fruition, it's going to start this year. It's going to start with Brad Keller compounding what he did last season, where he had a 2.4 ERA. Brady Singer, where he was really good and ate up a bunch of innings as a rookie. They're going to bring up a couple of these other young guys. They made a move this offseason for a guy like Mike Minor. All I'm saying is that potentially.
Do you not feel that same way about the lineup? Because I feel like everything you said about the rotation, I don't disagree with. Couldn't we say the exact same thing? Like, let's say that you're off on Modesty, and let's say
the lineup that you keep talking about, to me, has potential to be good, and they have potential to be good right away. I think the rotation has a chance to be great. I think it has a chance to 2-3 years from now, and this is contingent upon a bunch of guys we've never seen at the big league level, the Asa Lacy's and the Daniel Lynch's of the world. If those guys are half of what they're cracked up to be and the Royals have a chance with all these different arms, then yeah. Like, I think that the lineup can be good. There's no reason to think that it can't be. I think the rotation can be great.
Yeah, I don't know if I think that way about the offense. I mean, to me, the only way the offense is going to get at that great level, I would say their best offensive player just isn't on the team yet in Bobby Witt Jr., and we'll see what it looks like. And it's also predicated in Adalberto Mondesi turning the corner, not being one of those transcendent stars, but he's got to be a guy who can consistently hit 280. His on-base percentage has to be higher than 320. He's got to hit for power and stay healthy. To me, that's the only way, at least in the immediacy, without them adding from somebody not on the team, that I could see their lineup being great.
Do you think he will be? Sorry to cut you off. Do you think he will be? Like, I feel like every time we talk about Mondesi,
I don't know. Anybody can tell you definitively whether they know or not.
And that's always everybody's answer. It just gets a little bit old. And people don't like my answer, which is I don't think he's going to be.
I think we're at the last little bit of it where you can have that answer for I don't know. I mean, he's 25 years old, and he's been relatively inconsistent or hurt for the most part.
Wildly inconsistent and always hurt.
But we're talking about a 25-year-old. Like, I'm not at that point. And maybe I should have a hot take, like, I know this is going to happen without Alberto Mondesi. I just don't know how anyone can definitively say that without either lying to you on one side or the other. Like, I would say definitively saying this is what he is lying to you just based on other players we've seen in this farm system. Because if I'd asked you that same question about Lorenzo Cain, for example, at the exact same place, you would have told me we saw Lorenzo Cain, who was just as injury-prone as Adalberto Mondesi, never hit for any power in this organization. He finished third in the American League MVP vote one season. I'm not saying he's going to do that, but we've seen players with the Royals who have been those late bloomers. Whit Merrifield was a late bloomer. He wasn't a high prospect at 25 years old, but it clicked at 28. Lorenzo Cain, the exact same way. it really clicked later in his career. So I'm still willing to, all right, we're at the point now where you're running out of the time of potential. Danny Duffy, you run out of potential. You're 32 years old. I ain't talking about potential when you've been doing this for 10 years. This is what you are as a player. I'm not at that point without Alberto Mondesi yet. I'm still hopeful. I'm still holding out judgment.
But like with your example for Duffy, I feel like people up until, let's say, 2 years ago had that same type of optimism here in Kansas City. He was great that 1 year, and he was an innings eater, and he's a lefty, and bury me a Royal. He wants to be here, all these different things. Well, what about what he actually is now? I think that's the problem. So I think that there's some Royals fans out there that the reason that they say they're still holding out hope for Mondesi is because they don't want to admit that they think the hope is gone. And I would kind of put myself in that camp. And I'm not saying that I can't be wrong. I'm wrong all the time. Maybe he goes out there this year, plays 150 games, hits 280, steals 75 bases, and I have to come on and go, damn, everybody was right. He was that guy. But the flip side of that coin is maybe there's a lot of people seeing out that keep holding on to the fact that maybe he's never going to be that guy. So I'll just keep calling it optimism and hope and all that when in the back of your mind, like me, I just don't think that he's ever going to get there.
I mean, it's certainly possible. Like, I'm not saying one way or the other, but just, I guess, to kind of further the Lorenzo Cain point, Lorenzo Cain in 2013 hit for 4 home runs, had a 250 batting average, and a 310 on-base percentage. 310, and he was kind of healthy that year, played in 115 games, but up until that point, so Lorenzo Cain's first 4 years in the major leagues, he hit 12 home runs his first 4 years. 2014, took a huge jump and hit 300. And then in 2015, the power finally kicked in. At 29 years old, the power kicked in for Lorenzo Cain. He had 16 home runs, had his career high in RBIs, and also had his career high in batting average. Again, I'm not saying Adalberto Mondesi is going to turn into Lorenzo Cain, but if I had asked a lot of people at age 27 if they knew what Lorenzo Cain was, everybody would have said, yeah, we know exactly what he is. He's a guy who can't stay healthy, a guy who's not going to hit for a lot of power, and a guy who doesn't really hit for average. And then he magically turned into that player. We're not even at that stage yet for Adalberto Mondesi. So I think the Royals' track record of developing players late in their career should give us a little bit more rope, a little bit more benefit of the doubt for Mondesi.
I don't care about the age thing as much as I do the experience, because look at, I mean, baseball these days, Bobby Witt Jr. is like 14 years old. You know, he doesn't have his permit yet. It doesn't matter. They're like, the guys are much further developed in the process than they were 10, 15, 20 years ago. So I don't look at it like he's 25 years old. I look at it like he's been on this ball club for parts of now 5, if not 6 years. So to me, that's what it's all about with some of these young guys. And in the case of Mondesi, the Royals are just in a really weird, unique position because they've put a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort, a lot of hope, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this Mondesi thing. And the last thing they want to happen is next year, 2 years from now, they throw up their hands and say, screw it, he's never going to turn into that guy. And then he goes somewhere else, and he's 27 years old, and he turns into that guy. Like, so I understand. They're really between a rock and a hard place here. Do we keep this guy with all his potential that's, let's call it what it is, really done nothing consistently at the big league level? Or do we eventually cut bait with him and watch him do it somewhere else? That's going to be a tough pill to swallow.
Text line 913-576-7610. Someone said Lo Kane also started playing baseball much younger than Mondesi. Absolutely. Alex Gordon, I think, would also fit that category too. At 26 years old, Alex Gordon was sent down to Omaha and changed positions. He then came up the next year and won a gold glove at a different position.
But I just want to point out, for every Alex Gordon example that you have, or for every Lorenzo Cain where they got a bunch of at-bats and they played for a few years and then finally it clicks, there's a trillion more examples of guys that just continue to struggle at the same way that Mondesi has. Like, at some point, you're going to go, okay, he hit 240, he hit 260, he hit 250, he hit 250, and then you're going to come on and say, well, he's going to hit 280 this year? Like, really, who sounds foolish now?
No, you're right. But again, I think this organization has shown you the track record. People are saying Lo Kane's the exception. What about Mike Moustakas? What about Alex Gordon? Like, what about Whit Merrifield? Back in 2015 and 2016, none of us talked about Whit Merrifield, and this 29-year-old person showed up, and he became the most popular player on the team.
He didn't struggle at the big league level, though. Like, he was good the second that he got to the big league level.
During that time. So, I mean, it's also now penalizing Mondesi for being just further along in the development. He didn't get up here when he was 29 years old the way Whit Merrifield did. He got here when he was 19 years old. Very different than the Whit Merrifield story. Everybody's story is different. I just think the Royals, they have a track record of turning guys like that around. And a lot of it is just injuries that I don't really know how much he can help. Let's see if he can stay healthy this year. Let's see if he can play 140 games this year. And let's see what a full season looks like. Maybe we'll never get that full season from Monesy, and then we just got to chalk it up, and he's just always going to be an injury-prone guy. But let's at least see.
That's also a dangerous thing to do is keep saying, well, we haven't seen a full season of him. Well, okay, maybe it's because he's always getting hurt. I feel like with Monesy, he's gotten a long – the only guy that's ever gotten a longer leash and more optimism from people in Kansas City than Adalberto Mondesi without doing that much is Sammy Watkins. For some reason, there are certain athletes in this town that we just want to hold their feet to the flames and they can't do anything right. And there are some guys that have 8 touchdowns in their career and they get paid $60 million and we come up with a nickname for them, like Playoff Sammy. We get a million texts that say Sean's a hater. We need this guy to win the Super Bowl. It's the same thing with Mondesi. Again, I hope that Mondesi turns out to be Francisco Lindor. I hope that he turns out to be the best player in baseball. But based on what I've actually seen, I'm not going to come on here and try to convince people he's going to be that guy. How can I?
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Baseball is right around the corner. We'll celebrate it in Drive fashion. Keep it locked in right here.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. What's a fast food place that you think has a very underrated breakfast menu? I think it's Taco Bell. I think
Chick-fil-A.
You think it's underrated? I don't think people give it enough credit because it's by far and away the best.
Have you had Wendy's breakfast?
Yeah, it's okay.
It's all right. I'm trying to think of underrated breakfast. Have you had Jack in the Box breakfast?
No. I would never go out of my way to go to Jack in the Box for anything.
I don't even know if they have breakfast. Have you had White Castle breakfast?
I wouldn't go out of my way to get White Castle anything.
Do they still exist? We still got White Castles? There's one in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I think there's like a couple in St. Louis, too. There's not one here locally because Kansas City's really good about getting trash places out of here. Like, we're top-notch at getting those kind of venues out of here.
I feel like you're beating around the bush. Who we get out of here?
White Castle.
Oh, well, yeah.
White Castle.
I mean, if you're going to bring in Whataburger, then you can get rid of White Castle. Let's be honest. Definitely upgrade.
Yeah, because, I mean, Whataburger's top tier. Like, Whataburger's like, it's like the Russell Wilson of burgers. White Castle, that's like the Matt Castle of burgers.
Be careful, though, because we once had this great local burger chain called Winstead's, and now it's down to Winstead. How many are left? One?
Two.
Two? So it's still technically Winstead's? It ain't good,
as much as you talk about Winstead's, it's like 8 minutes from your house, and you never go to it. Like, it ain't that – like, if you really wanted to go to Winstead's, you could go to Winstead's. You don't like Winstead's nearly as much as you believe you do.
It's because I don't consider the one on the plaza to be an actual Winstead's. I just consider that –
oh, my goodness.
That's kind of – well, it's just always going to be there. Like, when all the other Winstead's are gone. What's the other one? Bet you don't know the other one.
In Blue Springs.
Okay, well, my bad.
No, the Blue Springs one died. It's the one on Row.
Oh, okay.
See?
Out in OP.
Nobody knows the other one. Everybody knows the one on the plaza.
I don't like their food, though. You love Winstead's, and it's like down the street from your house.
How do you not like the food at Winstead's? And it's super cheap.
Kansas City didn't like the food at Winstead's. That's why they started closing
them. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I think Kansas City didn't like the filthiness, if you will, the disgustingness, the dirtiness when you actually go to a Winstead's. I think that was the problem. I think that when you went there and you saw a bunch of nastiness, that was the issue. Nobody's got a problem with the half and half, the skyscraper, the double cheeseburger.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Let's celebrate baseball season with a little baseball tender.
It's time for Tinder Tuesday on The Drive. Swipe right if you like it. Swipe left if you don't. Tinder Tuesday on The Drive.
Well, opening day is around the corner, so it is a baseball tender Tuesday. We'll start with a nice pack of sunflower seeds.
Flavored or classic?
Classic. Flavored's trash. We're not gonna waste our time with that.
Rob, stop talking. I'm sorry. You're on timeout for the rest of the show for that comment.
Well, we need him to keep talking. He's the one. He's
I can read it. It's right here. I can read it.
Okay, Rob, sorry.
We don't need Rob to talk anymore for the rest of the show. Everything that Rob does is typed right here in our rundown. I can do. He's done.
I agree with you. I mean, that is a ludicrous statement because the plain sunflower seeds are okay. The ranch ones, the barbecue ones, the flavored ones are phenomenal. I mean, you could skip dinner if you had a pack of the big pack of the guy's ranch sunflower seeds. I'm swiping to the right.
I'm using a super like. I would actually pay for more likes. Everybody has a road trip food.
You're paying for more likes, bro. You're pathetic.
Everybody has a road trip food. I can drive as long as you need me to drive. As long as I have two Gatorades, and sunflower seeds. I cannot drive a long distance without having that alongside me. So I am a huge sunflower seed person. I don't care what it is. I'll eat the ranch ones. I'll eat the regular. I'll eat the barbecue. I'll try the dill pickle ones. It doesn't matter to me. I'm just a huge sunflower seed person. So, yes, I would pay for the likes for sunflower seeds.
The only place I've ever had sunflower seeds are watching a baseball game or playing a baseball or softball game.
That's my road trip food.
Where do you spit the shells?
I get a cup from the store.
That seems like a pain in the ass. No, I'm good. Just give me some beef jerky. On the road? Like if I'm driving to Iowa, Council Bluffs to go to the casinos or something?
Yeah, I have the cup right there and I just, boom, spit right in the cup and put the cup back in the cup holder.
What's the beef jerky that comes with the cheddar stick? I need that and then like a Sprite to wash it down with. They're clearly Canadian.
Someone on the text line asked a really good question. How is Waffle House still a thing if people care so much about cleanliness?
No, that's fair. That's a fair point. I think that Waffle House, though, like on a scale of 1 to disgusting, is like a 7. Winstead's is like a 9.5. Anybody that's listening right now knows exactly what I'm talking about.
I don't think Winstead's is that. I think the food was just
bro, I legitimately
average.
Don't think they ever replaced their booths. I'm not exactly sure that they wiped. You know what they did? They'd wipe down the tables, but they'd use like that wet rag where they'd leave that table, that layer of like water on top of it. Winstead's nasty, bro. It's not the food. That's not what cost Winstead's its career. It's life.
I don't know if you like the food. You live 4 minutes from Winstead's and you ain't been in 19 years
to
Winstead's.
The food is great. And again,
it ain't that good. You live down the street.
I was there a couple of weeks ago.
Why are you lying?
I swear on everything.
All right.
I was there a couple of weeks ago.
This is super cap, big cap.
There was no water for some reason.
Have you heard of big cap from Barstool? I'm going to start calling you big cap.
There was no water at the J.C. Nichols fountain because we passed it, and I looked to my right, and I thought, well, that's weird. You don't see that very often. And then there was no line at the Winstead's to the left, so I went and I got me a half and half. I wouldn't lie about that. I'd tell a better lie than that.
I mean, Town Topic's the exact same thing, and it's better. So that's probably what killed it.
It's just average. It's just average food.
Continuing our baseball Tinder Tuesday, what about a nice pack of Cracker Jacks?
Bro, who's eating Cracker Jacks? Why is Rob talking? Cracker Jacks!
Why are you guys talking both? I'm pretty sure it's just Cracker Jack. I don't think there's a Jacks. I don't think it's plural. I think it's just called Cracker Jacks.
Whatever it is, trash. That's what it is.
Is it called Cracker Jacks?
I don't care what it is.
It's
the trash.
Possessive.
Oh, okay. Multiple. You get the toy in it, though.
It's trash!
Cracker Jacks are nasty. What is that? Like caramel popcorn and nuts?
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
Yeah.
Get the hell out of here. Don't buy me either one of those things at the baseball game. You don't love me if you buy me peanuts and Cracker Jack at the baseball game. Why do I need peanuts when there's peanuts inside the Cracker Jack?
There was a summer I lived.
The song's never made any sense.
I lived in Chicago, and I actually sold peanuts. I'd stand outside of Wrigley Field, and I'd yell, "Don't be shy. Grab your nuts."
We move on with the proper way to eat a hot dog. Sauerkraut and mustard on your dog.
What is wrong with Rob? Rob is sick. Yeah. Sauerkraut?
I mean, sauerkraut's actually pretty good on a hot dog.
No.
Yeah, it is.
What is wrong with you people?
There's a section over in like left field where they're grilling up some real, I think it's brats. I don't know if it's hot dogs, but you can get kraut on it out there
sauerkraut.
At Kauffman Stadium. You're probably putting relish on yours.
I hate relish. You know I'm a mustard person.
I bet there's people listening to put both sauerkraut and relish on their hot dogs. Those people are called nasty.
What is wrong with you people?
Oh, sauerkraut's not bad. I wouldn't put it on anything other than a Reuben sandwich or a hot dog.
This is what you guys want me to believe. You guys want me to believe that you're going to a baseball game, you're getting an Aramark hot dog, and you're putting sauerkraut on it? Okay. All right.
You got to put something on it. Have you had those things plain?
You're missing the next. You know what?
Yes, you're missing the next 3 innings. We know.
No, don't go to the next. Don't go ahead and call off the next day because you're going to be out with food poisoning. So let's say you go to opening day on Thursday. You basically are going to miss Thursday and Friday because you're going to miss Friday with food poisoning because you decided to play Russian roulette with your life.
I'm sure there's been a person or two that did not get food poisoning from those hot dogs.
Our last one on baseball ballpark tender is a candy that is trash, cotton candy.
I'm telling you this right now. If you get the sauerkraut and Aramark hot dog, your stomach is going to sound like Dougie Fresh. Your stomach's going to be doing a beatbox like an 80s rapper, like the Fat Boys.
Why are you putting that on the company Aramark? If you eat any sort of a hot dog, you're going to be feeling like Dougie Fresh.
I like hot dogs. I'm not going to lie to you. Not too long ago, I actually stopped at Quick Trip. I filled up, put 40 on pump 5, and I got 2 hot dogs for like $2.22.
Will you root 222?
You're a sicko. You put onions and nacho cheese on it. You're nasty.
That's definitely my topping of choice. Like right now, if we did a hot dog draft, all I need is that little cheap nacho cheese and some onions.
I just puked in my mouth.
And some onions.
Hold on. When you go to Quick Trip and you get the hot dog on the little roller thing, you push the button and you get the chili on top of it?
No, I don't get the chili. I just get the cheese.
Because you know that ain't chili. Like, nobody made that chili. I don't know exactly what it is. The cheese is fine, although the problem with the cheese is if it's just even a little bit watered down, now you're putting, like, orange water on what's already a hot dog. And I don't know if you know what a hot dog's made out of. It's not good. That's nasty. All that stuff's nasty. I haven't eaten a hot dog. I'm being dead honest with you.
Bro, you eat at Steak and Shake. You can't be critical of anybody when you eat at Steak and
Shake. Ain't nothing wrong with Steak and Shake. I don't know why you're smack-talking all these places.
You can't talk all high and mighty when you go. Think of all the great foods we got around the corner here. You drive by a Chipotle. You drive by a Chick-fil-A. You drive by all these places
that stop at Steak and Shake.
I know you wonder why there ain't no line during lunchtime because ain't nobody eating that nasty food.
Look. I know how good Chick-fil-A is.
Steak and Shake.
It's not as good as the line. Come on.
You want to know how trash Steak and Shake is? The only place that gives us more coupons than them is a Bed Bath & Beyond. Steak and Shake mails us coupons at least 3 times a week. And anybody that has a physical address, you get Steak and Shake coupons. They're begging you to go at 30% off.
The thing about
off.
Steak and Shake is if you just empty out
it's
the change.
Trash.
If you empty out the change in your ashtray, you can feed a family of 18. It's super cheap, and it's not trash. When's the last time you had Steak and Shake?
I would never do that to me or my family. Keep that food away from me. Okay. Why would I do that?
All right.
I honestly, right now, if you gave me the option of eating at Quick Trip or Steak and Shake, I'd much rather eat at Quick Trip.
Quick Trip's definitely upgraded their food game over the last couple of years. And yeah. I will say it's cleaner.
You're telling me if I could have a taquito or I could have one of those chicken buffalo rollers?
Neither one.
Chicken buffalo rollers are a game changer.
Fire!
Put it on the bun with some ranch, boys.
Fire!
Change your life.
Fire!
Then you can find a Johnny on the spot on the way home, too, because your tummy's going to be aching.
Somebody said Steak and Shake is like bad national Winsteads. That's exactly what it is. Bad national Winsteads.
That's a very good way to describe it, but that doesn't make it bad.
It's terrible.
Just because it's a bad version of Winsteads that you can find in almost every state in the union doesn't mean that it's awful. In fact, I love Steak and Shake. Yeah, I think it's underrated.
Well, I was on Instagram not too long ago. You can get a franchise right now of Steak and Shake for $10,000. You can own a Steak and Shake for $10,000. So they should be popping up ever. They're giving franchisees licenses away for 10 stacks. Basically, save all your stimulus check. Put all your stimulus check plus your tax returns. You can own a Steak and Shake. That's the deal they have right now. Coming up in a little bit, we'll get to the top stories. Stay away from Steak and Shake. It's gross. It's the drive.